robs me of my rest. Love, hopeless love, my ardent soul encumbers. Love, nightmare-like, lies heavy on me chest and weaves itself into my midnight slumbers. When you're lying awake with a dismal headache and repose is tabooed by anxiety, I conceive you may use any language you choose to indulge in without impropriety. For your brain is on fire, the battles conspire of usual slumber to plunder you. First your counterbeam goes and uncovers your toes and your sheet slips demurely from under you. Then the blanketing tickles you feel like mixed pickles, so terribly sharp is the pricking. And you're hot and you cross and you tumble and toss till there's nothing twixt you and the ticking. Then the bedclothes will creep to the ground in a heap and you pick them all up in a tangle. Next your pillow resigns and politely declines to remain at its usual angle. Well, you get some repose in the form of a doze without eyeballs and head ever aching. But your slumbering tints such horrible dreams that you'd very much better be waking. For you dream you are crossing the channel and tossing about in a steamer from Harwich, which is something between a large bathing machine and a very small second-class carriage. And you're giving a treat, penny ice and cold meat, to a party of friends and relations. They're a ravenous horde and they all came on board at some square and South Kensington stations. And bound on that journey you find your attorney who started that morning from Devon. He's a bit undersized and you don't feel surprised when he tells you he's only 11. Well, you're driving like mad with this singular lad, by the ship's now four-wheeler. And you're playing round games and he calls you bad names when you tell him the ties pay the dealer. But this you can't stand, so you throw up your hand and you find you're as cold as an icicle. In your shirt and your socks, the black silk and gold clocks crossing Salisbury Plain on a bicycle. And he and the crew are on bicycles too, which they've somehow or other invested in. And he's telling the tars all the particulars of a company he's interested in. It's a scheme of devices to get at low prices all goods from cough mixtures to cables, which tickle the sailors by treating retailers as though they were all vegetables. You get a good spadesman to plant small trays and first take off his boots with a boot tree. And his legs quick root and his fingers will shoot till they blossom and bud like a fruit tree. From the greengrocer tree you get grapes and green pea, cauliflower, pineapple and cranberries. While the pastry cook plant cherry brandy will grant apple puffs and three corners and benberries. The shares are a penny and ever so many are taken by Rothschild and Baring. And just as a few are allotted to you, you awake with a shudder despairing. You're a regular wreck with a crick in your neck and a one-deer snore for your head's on the floor, and you've needles and pins from your soles, your shins, and your flesh is a creep in your leg from steep, and you've cramped in your toes and a fly in your nose, and some fluff in your lung and a feverish tongue and a thirst of intention, a general sense that you haven't been sleeping in clover. But the darkness has passed and it's daylight at last, and the night has been long, ditto, ditto, my song. And thank goodness they're both of them all.
We are much distressed to see your lordship in this condition.
Ah, my lords. It is seldom that a Lord Chancellor has reason to envy the position of another. But I am free to confess that I would rather be two earls engaged to Phyllis than any other half-dozen noblemen upon the face of the globe.
Yes, it's an enviable position when you're the only one.
Oh, yes, no doubt, most enviable. At the same time, seeing you thus, we naturally say to ourselves, this is very sad. His lordship is constitutionally as blithe as a bird. He trills upon the bench like a thing of song and gladness. His series of judgments in F-sharp minor, given andante in 6/8 time, are among the most remarkable effects ever produced in a court of chancery. He is perhaps the only living instance of a judge whose decrees have received the honor of a double encore. How can we bring ourselves to do that, which will deprive the Court of Chancery of one of its most attractive features?
I feel the force of your remarks, but I am here in two capacities, and they clash, my lords, they clash. I deeply grieve to say that in declining to entertain my last application to myself, I presume to address myself in terms which render it impossible for me ever to apply to myself again. It was a most painful scene, my lords. Most painful.
This is what it is to have two capacities. Let us be thankful that we are persons of no capacity whatever.
Come. Remember, you are a very just and kindly old gentleman, and you need have no hesitation in approaching yourself so that you do so respectfully and with a proper show of deference.
Do you really think so?
I do.
Well, I will nerve myself to another effort, and if that fails, I resign myself to my fate.